Hello, you're listening to... This is actually the quasi-indefatigable Zenolith! People kind of wonder sometimes if I would ever do another Quicks recording. And it really depends on the subject matter. Today's subject matter is about Godsend. My nascent great fictional product. Been kind of dormant for a while as I'm working on other things, but some things came to mind, so it's time to record them, and the traditional place to record those is in the quasi-indefatigable Zenolith recordings. This is not a podcast. It goes into the Gopher Space. And, of course, there's been some interesting things on the Gopher Space thing that I've been working on, so, frankly, we'll get to that eventually, I would imagine. Because that's also another project I started working on. I got too many projects going. I'm going to get a few of them brought to conclusion. Let's talk a little bit about Godsend. Honestly, I always pictured it as a movie, so I'm kind of just thinking about just going ahead and just doing it as a movie and not doing the book so much, you know. I guess I envisioned 4 movies. It used to be, you know, it was 3 books. Now I need to break into 4 movies just for the simple reason that I think the last book is by far going to be the largest and the most meaty. Therefore, it makes more sense to split into 2 movies, because you want movies to be of a certain length. And I've always noticed that as I've tried to fill in and try to make what would essentially be some short stories, which has mostly been my medium in the past, into a novel, something much larger. I keep running up against the basic problem. So 4 movies instead of 3 books. I think we'll call, we used to call the first movie Escape, but I think we're going to call the first book Escape. I think we'll call that, Revelation. Because that's really at the heart of it is revelation that comes to Melisandre. Not so much God revealing, but sort of, because, you know, she falls into the possession of this book. It tells her about the past, about how things really are supposed to be. And the fact that they're not, and how they were perverted and destroyed over time. Usually all in one fell swoop. Things tend to fall at once. They can tend to be redeemed at once. God can do the redeeming very quickly. Question is, what side are you on when the redeeming starts happening? Are you so beholden to a system that you've married yourself to that, When the great day of salvation comes, you almost have to, you feel beholden to reject it because of what you've had to do. It's when somebody gets co-opted by their means to an end. Not that the end was necessarily a bad thing, but the means to get there became so destructive that things fell apart. Well, that you find yourself on the wrong side of a line. And, you know, unless you're really willing just to take a step back and say, you know, everything I did up until this time, although with good intentions in mind were wrong, and I find myself on the wrong side of a battle. And but that really kind of happens toward the end. Anyway, four movies. First one called Revelation. Second one called Prophecy. Third one called Escape. And fourth one called Deliverance. And of course, there's all kinds of things tying back to other parts, you know. You tend to see little bits and pieces of all the movies in the first. That's important. It's important to know that this is a cohesive unit, you know. This isn't just something of, we made this first movie, and if this first movie is successful, then we'll do some sequels, you know. And it's going, well, no. No, it's really, you know, it's really like the Lord of the Rings movie trilogy was, which I personally think was kind of crazy because really should have been split up into more movies, you know. And, well, anyway, so there's what we have. And the fact that we're going to do this without really having a book behind it, I think it's also kind of good because, you know, I'm really struggling with the book, and I think it might do good to make it more into a screenplay and then to actually do it. Now, because I'm just one person, or it will just basically be a family project, I think it kind of behooves it to be something of an animation job. You know, you don't want it to be, you know, and we're going to have to play with it because it can't be amazing, fantastic animations like you would see like what's common now, the kind of CG stuff where it's almost photo realistic as much as we can. We're trying to do CG characters and put into that. We're trying to make things look as realistic as possible. I want to get away from that just from the simple point of, number one, this thing needs to come from kind of an otherworldly sort of thing. I don't want it to be foreign to the point to where you can't plug it into reality and say, you know, this is really a thing on reality. I honestly see it kind of from a VeggieTales standpoint. The guys had very limited capability when they first started with VeggieTales. And they did it in their garage, you know. Of course, it's become a much larger thing because they kind of thought this is a fantastic, amazing possibility to make a living and to do things like that, which is fine. You know, I'm not downgrading that at all, but that we even start out that way. You know, they did the thing based on vegetables because vegetables were easy to draw in a computer animation way. So I think we're going to have to do it the same way. I think I'd like to do it a little more artsy. You know, make it more like What was Sleeping Beauty? Sleeping Beauty was done more as living medieval paintings. And I think I like to do that because I think I can pull off the kind of art that medieval people were doing. Not that I can do the kind of fantastic stuff they did, but, you know, more of the more folksy stuff and make it more folksy. Without having to be this amazing animation shop. I need to find some middle ground there. Not making it too beyond the pale of saying I can see past the animation and look more upon the what's going on. It is somewhat personality driven. You know, we have characters, we have people, but we also have this unseen force. We have God acting. And that makes it nice because you don't see God. You see what happens when God is moving, but you don't see him. He's probably the largest character in this, but yet unseen. You know, kind of a behind the scenes sort of person, which is what God really ends up being. He ends up being the biggest mover of things, but one that you don't see. So I also want something that we can play with and we can work with that doesn't have to be so. It doesn't have to be a long, drawn out, nasty, meticulous art project, like a really great, beautiful art animation is, and can be more along the lines of, you know, something telling a story, kind of the film animation version of like Our Town, which is very sparse, and it mostly has to do with you know, characters and their motivations. You know, you aren't drawn into this new into this wonderful visually rich world. You aren't there. This has a whole lot to do, much more with circumstances and people and God acting on people and how people respond to that. This has always been, you know, I'm always digging down deeper into anything. I'm digging deeper into God's and the actual story and what it's actually trying to do. And so, yeah, I said, I'd like some kind of, you know, it'll probably be computer-generated animation because I've got the computer. I've got the power to be able to do that. I don't think I want to do 3D particularly for the simple reason that, you know, I don't really think I have the computing power to pull that off. You know, it's going to be much more along the lines of 2D, but, you know, without so much of the art business to it, you know. I don't want to go so far as they're just shapes, and you really have to stretch your imagination to say, okay, this circle is this character, this square is that character. You don't want to go that far. But, you know, somewhere between photorealistic and that, you know, circle stands for Melisenda, square stands for Daimler. Whatever. We can take it however we want to. I don't think I want to go the whole Disney route of having animals, you know, having animals represent people. I don't want to go the VeggieTale route of having vegetables represent people. You know, I'm interested more in the story. You know, it's not going to be, oh man, the fantastic CG. You know, I don't want anybody to say how fantastic our CG is. I want people to say, wow, what a story. I don't want these things to distract from the story, but I also don't want to have to spend a ton of time trying to make them, you know, make them happen. So I'm going to have to acquire some software. I hope it's free. I would really love for it to be like open source software that's kind of on the simple side. I think that would be really excellent and make me very happy, you know. So we're not trying to do 3D animation particularly, unless there's just no other, it doesn't seem to be working otherwise. I think I would much prefer having a pretty limited medium, because I really want it to be the story, you know. I don't want the story to be distracted by the medium particularly, but I think the story can fit within a pretty limited medium to allow that kind of thing to happen. I would do it as a radio show, but honestly, I don't think... That's got pretty limited appeal to a lot of people. Although, you know, with podcasting, I can see it happening. So maybe we might try it first as a radio show, and then see kind of where it goes from there. Anyway, so might be an interesting podcast. You know, we're just trying to get something across. If we aren't going to make it with simple animation, we may just have to make it with voice. So I guess it wouldn't work too bad. So, but we'd have to chop it up into a lot more pieces to make it work. Or, well, just go ahead and record as a full script and then go with it that way. So, you know, this is what we have, this is what we're pulling together. So we can do it that way. And then we can add music later and stuff like that. And so there it is. First I was thinking about animation, now I'm kind of thinking of kind of a radio program. Something that might do well on the BBC. But something that a family can do, you know. An animation thing is really difficult. But we need, we need a pretty good stable of voices. So I'm going to need that, personally. Anyway, so, this is Jay Nemro, and, boy, is this it? Is this all quasi-indefatigable Zenlith is going to be? So, okay, I'm looking at four radio programs. The first one is kind of is the combination of our introduction drawn up to the marriage, which is the ultimate stepping away from the way life is toward what God wants, toward following God. So we kind of have that whole progression there. And the second one will, of course, be we will pick up where Ennis is having the great battle, you know, give us a peg of the fact that the land inside is protected from the land outside, and other things, and also introduce us to a huge problem in that Waykeep is being deserted in so many ways from you know, everything, and at the same time, and that Melisandre and Davor are starting to get those yearnings to return to first home, you know. And getting the vision that needs to happen. It goes from that point up until Westland destroys, you know, until the death of Mishiana and all of that, you know, until all that is done. You know, it pretty much follows the original things of the books, except that you know what, honestly, since I'm not trying to break it down into movies now, I can go ahead and keep it to 3. Although, you know, 4 isn't that bad of a deal. 4 isn't that bad. You know, because it's going to have to be series, you know. Nobody's going to broadcast the entire thing, one would imagine. But one could. I mean, we can go ahead and record as one thing and then try to break it up into pieces that makes sense. And then you can have the form where it's episodes, and that can be shoved into, like, say, a podcast, for instance, and then you can distribute it that way. You can have the recordings, and then you can have the actual distribution of the recording. Anyway. You know what we'll have to get? We'll have to get a really good microphone. I think that's really important. You need to have a good microphone. I think I have plenty of the right equipment for doing the actual recording. We don't have to go that way because it's going to all be done on computer, probably on Audacity. And, and so we'll take care of that. I kind of like the sound of that. I think I can get the family interested in that. You know, we can make that good. At least it can help me a whole lot with the script and the flow and how that's supposed to go. And, you know, and we can have the kids come and do their recording sessions for the characters that they're doing. You know, and then comes the big post-production stuff. I think I'm still trying to recover from sleep I lost. Not that I lost, but sleep that I didn't choose to take a couple of days ago. I find that when I stay up late, I pay a pretty hefty price, you know, for some days. It used to be I could do it, and then I could get some sleep, and then I'd be okay. Now it's more of, you know, it takes me 2 or 3 days to finally get my body back into shape. But anyway. That's kind of where things stand there. And, there's another project that needs some doing. What are some of the other projects I have going right now? Let me think. Of course, you know, I don't really consider the podcast a project. You know, it's more of a video journal, but it's a video journal of things that go on and such. I don't really consider that as a project because, you know, it never really ends. It ends up just being a published thing of what I'm doing. Quasi-Indefatigable Zenilith, the recording, which you're listening to right now, is really more of a rough type of thing. Although I can't say that that some of the podcast episodes are the same way. You know, people say, "Oh, well, you've missed some. I see some episode breaks in there." And you go, "Yeah, by and large, those are episodes that were removed or that became quasi-Indefatigable Zenilith recordings, just because they were just too rough to get on the podcast." And but then there's some I record specifically for Quasi-Indefatigable Zenilith, which is this one. This is one of those working documents. Oh, the other ones. The big web server. I have been looking at Roxen, which is an old web server. It is really niche, but that web server has all the attributes that I wanted to have in my thing. Unlike Zope's big problem is that it's a good way to say it? Zope is really... what am I trying to say? Zope always ends up being extremely huge overkill. And it lacks a couple of features that I really want. I really want kind of a unified system. I would like to have my Gopher server and my web server together. Roxen can do that. Of course, I think Zope can do that too, but not without a lot of retooling. Roxen's really good because it already has kind of that interface for doing different protocols. It's, you know, it has the FTP section. It has the World Wide Web part, and I think you have the Gopher part. And as you try to unify those things, as you say, okay, let's make it so that you can record this way. You can have it download through this means. So much the better. You know, and it also has throttling, which I desperately need for the podcast. You know, I really don't want the podcast to chew up tons and tons of bandwidth, because one person could easily steal all my bandwidth, what little I have, by just trying to do a big download. And you know, just by saying, well, I'm going to download his whole podcast, and I'm going to, you know, and they could suck my whole thing down. Trying to throttle back can help with that. It doesn't really eliminate all of it. Maybe the throttling on Roxen may be able to. So I was taking a look earlier last week at having Roxen take over, dropping Zope. Of course, I think I'm going to go ahead and do Zope for stuff where that makes a lot of sense, which is like the website at work. I think I'll go ahead and stick with Zope for that because I think it lends itself to that. The things I'm doing at home don't tend to lend themselves to that. I need a little more flexibility than just the kind of rigid inheritance, object-oriented based inheritance stuff that Zope likes to throw at everything. Roxen's a little more free form. It's kind of between PHP on Apache and things like that. So I'm gonna take a look at Roxen again because I think it's really good, and I think it's kind of a simple interface, you know. It's not that I have to retool the whole thing. It's almost like if I were to use Zope to do what I really wanted to do, I would almost have to rip it to shreds and make it so that, you know, it's not really even Zope anymore. The framework doesn't lend itself to it because I'd like to have kind of an automated way to do the genealogy side, you know. I think Roxen would be a lead-in to what I call Buster. And Buster's just a working name. You know, it's mostly, I named it because it's supposed to be the Web Buster. It's almost kind of an expansion from Gopher. I kind of think it is Gopher resurrected to a new age. Of course, it's not going to be Gopher so much. I think it'll have a Gopher interface to it, you know, but kind of the back end of it, which isn't going to be a relational database, really. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be more slimmed down so that it's not so difficult to work with. It's more of a personal internet appliance thing, and I think the Roxen thing is kind of moving in that direction. We might be able to put a store behind it that allows that kind of stuff. I'm not really big on Roxen for a couple of reasons. Number one, it's got this huge, you know, it's got this database back end. But that's life, you know, almost all of them do. Buster doesn't. Buster has what would equate into kind of a mix between a database and a file system, and it kind of works on that level, but really simple, because what it does is it is actually built on a permanent store, you know, which is a whole different paradigm from what we're used to. We're used to having storage that can be erased and used again. That's always been the paradigm, for the simple reason that you constantly didn't have enough storage to keep everything. You'd always have to erase things to allow space for more things. I think we're getting to the point to where if you do something correctly, or if you do something a certain way, you know, the kind of storage we have now is practically limitless. You know. And Buster kind of brings in the whole idea of being a producer rather than just a mindless consumer. It really does kind of enforce that sort of world, you know. But not in the way that, like, say, file sharing does. People say, well, I'm being productive. You go, no, you're not. You're stealing something from somebody else and just sharing it. That takes no creative effort. You didn't create it, somebody else did. You're just putting it along a channel. You know, that's one of the great downfalls of the web, was that it throws you into that whole paradigm of there's only a handful of producers, and then there's just these milling consumers, and that's what most people end up being, these milling consumers. And, you know, I kind of want a society change on this. I want people to be more productive by nature. You know, and not in that, you know, a lot of people on the internet, even with the so-called productive things like blogs and things like that, they end up just becoming signposts, you know. I went to the web, I saw this and this and this, why don't you go see them too? And that's what the productive is. And you're going, what? No. You know, it's like you're just putting out signposts everywhere you go. And that doesn't really mean anything, you know. That ends up being the whole life. It's not creating something new and different. It's just making connections between one thing and another thing. And I think that's kind of sad. Now, I'm not saying that that is part of the act of being productive. But, you know, a lot of people actually produce something new. New insights do come on the shoulders of things in the past, but they don't necessarily come from, I'm stringing this stuff together. I think of it as, you know, I think of one of our current problems of as being what in Mormon parlance is, or in what Christians do all the time, which is called scripture chains. I don't like scripture chains. They think they tend to try to synthesize something new from a string of scriptures run together. You know, that's how Christianity got way off the mark, I think, was from this whole attitude about scripture chains, you know. I take this little bit from this part of this, I take this little bit from this part of this. They may share a word or an idea, usually just a word, because that's where you lose those ideas, and that you say, you know, it becomes a battle of different definitions. When somebody means salvation, what does that mean? When somebody means baptism, what does that mean? You know, that's why, like the Christian world is so fractious. That's why it's broken into so many different pieces, going in so many different directions. It's based on the definitions, the accepted definitions of key terms, you know. And that's what kind of happens on the web, you know. People can start pulling lots of things together, and that's all it ends up being. You know, there's very little new content on the web. Most of the content on the most of the new stuff you see there is just new connections between things. You know, the most popular websites are like portals that send you to different places. You know, oh, I go to this website because it sends me to this, and this. You know, very little real content is created by those places. They only point you to another place, like a signpost. You know, I'm not saying that that's bad, but I'm just saying I'd like us to move up to a new level where we're actually creative too, where we actually come up with things. Instead of being sign pointers and say, oh, look, here's this. Oh, look, here's that. Oh, look, here's this. We say, no, you know, we're trying new ideas. And that's what Buster is. It's a new idea. It isn't just pointing towards the same old technologies and trying to get convergence. That's kind of what we're getting is kind of a convergence mentality of, you know, the actual technology of recording sounds and reproducing that, the actual technology of a phone, have been around for a long time, you know, and people trumpet the fantastic innovation of putting sound recording, like an MP3 player, into a phone, a cell phone, you know, and it's like, oh my gosh, it's a paradigm shift, oh my goodness, and you're going, no, it's not. You're taking something that got created years ago, and you're finally finding a way to make it small enough, and, you know, it's mostly marketing, it's mostly doing mashups and seeing if that generates buzz and therefore, you know, sales, money. You know, and it's not about any real kind of innovation at all. We aren't really trying to create anything new. We're just doing new mashups of things and trying to come up with ways to market them. You know, it's probably the dirty, nasty side of capitalism. The capitalism really gets tired of new things because it's too hard to get people to understand new things. So it's gotten to the point where it's digressed down to being different flavors of mashups of these things. You know, what new features can I glom onto an iPod that will make it a new fantastic thing? You know, people go, oh, it's just so innovative and cool. And you go, no, it's not. It's not innovative. That's the whole point. It doesn't do anything new. It was being done before. You know, the packaging is certainly nice. The artsy thing is certainly nice. It's a buzz thing. The iPod was one of the great buzz products. You know, it didn't do anything new. It just packaged it in such a way that everybody got excited about it. So, anyway, so Buster is trying to be just something that's really uniquely new. You know, does it catch on? I have no idea. I'll throw it out there and see what happens. It's, you know, it isn't so much to be rich, although that would be nice. I'm not going to say that I'm trying to avoid getting rich. I'd love to get rich. Well, I don't know if I'd love to get rich. I would love the opportunities that would open up for me. I feel like I've got all these things to say. I think if I had influence, I could use it for good. And I want to do that, and I want, you know, and I'm asking God to help me, Father. I'm asking you to help me. Because I think I'm one of those kinds of people. In the Book of Mormon, in the Book of Jacob, Jacob was talking about that. He says, don't chase riches, don't chase money, because it tends to be its own, you know, it tends to destroy you in ways that aren't good. He says, but if you work for the kingdom of God and then you desire wealth to do good with it, God will help you get it. And so I would like to be at that point. I think that would be really, really, really nice. Oof, big potholes. Yikes. So, anyway, that's kind of what I'm up to. New stuff on Godsend. One of their big projects I've been working on is Buster. And I've got some little side projects I hope to get kind of cleaned up here. I've been buying little pieces of extremely old technology with the desire of... it gave me some added capability at home. You know, and it might be nice to kind of experiment with it because I'm going to have that capability soon. Especially if I can pick this stuff up for next to nothing. Just getting that way. Wireless. I'm going to do wireless networking at home. Just a little bit more capability, and I'm using a really old proprietary Proxim Open Air standard, the nice part is I won't have people driving by the house picking up my signal and siphoning off my bandwidth. I'm really protective of my bandwidth, as you can tell from my struggles with trying to put up the kind of website I really want, is that I want to do that. Also, I was working toward doing the Roxton web server because I can see the possibility of really doing a much better job with the NevermindFamily.org website. You know, I'm not really big and heavy into really graphical user interfaces, you know, and that's true of websites too. I'm much more like simple, clean, fast. And I want to do that because, it comes in also because of the hardware I use tends to be on the old side, you know, so I don't want something that really bogs down my website. Zope has a bad habit of really bogging down a server just from its huge overhead. I want to reduce that overhead. Ultimately, if we get to kind of a Buster motif, that is the ultimate, you know, reduction of bandwidth. That you would have that. You'd have a really, 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 really almost force-based dictionary sort of database. Really simple, and takes care of the job. I love Forth. Forth is a great thing. Haven't written a line of Forth code. They don't really come in lines. Haven't created any Forth words in probably 10 years. But you have to understand that it's something that really, you know, that really seems to me. I think I make it a little simpler. You know, it tends to have a compiler side of it, and then it has what do you call it? Then it has an interpreter side of it. And I've always thought that it might be a little simpler if you didn't have that distinction. You know, I'm always trying to get to the very heart of things. And part of getting to the very heart of things is getting rid of distinctions. I remember in programming, the distinction between a function and a procedure was nothing, you know. A function gives you a result, a procedure didn't. You know, at least, you know, these things are always clouded by the fact that people use the same words to mean different things. But, you know, everything can basically be a function. I always like that kind of, that way of doing things. Therefore, I look kind of like functional programs because I like breaking down things into functions. And that's what Forth ends up being. It ends up being really functional because you break down everything into words. And, you know, words contain other words and stuff like that. And it becomes this big conglomerated thing as you build your application through the use of Forth words. Excellent, excellent little pieces of stuff. Lends itself more to embedded things instead of to big libraries like, say, C does. I've been studying a little bit about C, too. So, I'm looking at, when I get some spare time, doing a little C programming. You know, because it's nice and low level. It's both low level and high level programming. And that's got some real neat things to it. I don't like C++. I'm not an object-oriented person. I find that ties me down too much. You know, that whole paradigm says you've got to do things in a certain way. Objects are only looked at with certain views. That's one of the other problems with Zope. Zope is also object-oriented, which means you have to build things up that way, you know. Do it this way, do it this way, do it this way. And I tend to get away from object orientation. I don't think along things that way. I stick with the basic thing of having, you know, I tend to build my own databases. I tend to build my own data stores. And want the flexibility of being able to use them the way I want them to. I find there's a lot of crust that comes from almost fighting a certain orientation, you know. I'm fighting the use of objects. You know, you always have to be breaking into to an object to pull information out of it that at first you never intended. And I like the capability of being able to add, to be able to be a little more fluid with it. I think extreme programming, which is kind of how I, one of the philosophies that I really enjoy. Extreme programming is problematic when you're dealing with object-based stuff. So I like C better than C++, you know. I know C++ is now the preferred one, but I like C better for the simple reason that it's just simpler and it's more functional, and I like that, you know. Not that it's like Forth at all, but you know, it's got some of the but it's kind of down low. What you like. Anyways, Jay Nemro. You listen to Quasi Indefatigable Vivat. Have a great day.